This is BBC Bite Size with Chris Smith and with Richard Van Orden. We're from The Naked Scientists. This podcast is all about chemical reactions, and in part one, we found out about rates of reactions, but now we're going to find out about the energy of a reaction. So, Richard, how do chemical reactions involve energy?
Well, many reactions, like burning fuel, give out an enormous amount of energy, usually as heat, to the surroundings, and we call these exothermic reactions. So, for example, a metal fizzing in an acid, the neutralisation between an acid and a base are all exothermic. That's because in these reactions, you're breaking weak, unstable bonds and forming strong, stable bonds. This releases potential energy and normally releases heat.
And are all reactions exothermic? Do they all give out heat?
Not all of them. Sometimes a chemical reaction sucks in energy from the surroundings, and we call that an endothermic reaction. For example, electrolysis, splitting an ionic compound apart, is endothermic. The reaction sucks in the energy that you provide with an electric current. Here you're breaking up a very stable system to make higher energy bonds. Also, the reaction between ethanoic acid and sodium carbonate in water forms sodium ethanoate, water and carbon dioxide. And as that does so, it sucks in heat from the water, lowering the water's temperature.
How can that be? Shouldn't the products of a reaction always be more stable or have a lower energy than the reactants?
Not always. Chemical reactions can always happen in both directions. If they're reversible, normally the direction which is exothermic, the one that gives out heat, will be faster, but only if all the right reactants are available. In the case of the ethanoic acid and the sodium carbonate, the reaction will take place in both directions, but if any product, carbon dioxide, is released, it will bubble away. So there'll be very little CO2 left for the reverse reaction, the exothermic reaction.
Which means that the exothermic direction is going to be very slow because there isn't much CO2 there for it to react with.
Yeah, so the back reaction, the exothermic reaction, will be much slower than the endothermic direction. And the overall reaction will be endothermic and it will suck heat out of the surroundings.
And this reversibility of the reactions you mentioned, is that typical of all reactions?
Technically, yes, but practically, no. In some cases, like burning fuel, the products are so much more stable than the reactants that the reaction is effectively irreversible. But some reactions are more finely balanced. They're reversible. And we write these reactions with two half arrowheads, showing they can easily go both ways.
So what sorts of reactions are reversible like that?
Well, a good example is the Haber process, where nitrogen and hydrogen gases react to form ammonia, which is a colourless gas and a weak alkali, and it smells horrible. If you seal some nitrogen and hydrogen in a box, over time, some of the gas would react and you'd get some ammonia. But the ammonia could also break up to form nitrogen and hydrogen again. The reaction's reversible.
So what would you end up with then if that happened?
Well, eventually the system would settle down. So although ammonia molecules would be breaking up and the nitrogen and hydrogen would be reacting together, both would be happening at the same speed. So the total concentrations of reactants and products don't change. That means you've reached an equilibrium. All reversible reactions happening in a closed system will eventually reach an equilibrium.
And what is a closed system?
It just means nothing can escape. If we remove the ammonia from the box, that's an open system, more nitrogen and hydrogen would react together to take its place. If we keep removing ammonia, all the nitrogen and hydrogen will react. It's a cunning way of getting a reversible reaction to just produce the product we want, in this case, ammonia. In practice, the ammonia is actually cooled, liquefied, and removed, so the unreacted nitrogen and hydrogen can be recycled.
What about using a catalyst? Wouldn't that do the same thing?
Well, there is an iron catalyst in the Haber process which speeds up the reaction, but it speeds up forward and back reactions by the same amount. In a closed box, this just means equilibrium is reached a bit faster.
Okay, so is there a way of getting more ammonia without having to open that box?
Yeah, one way of affecting the equilibrium is with temperature. The Haber process gives out heat when ammonia is formed. It's exothermic, so when you heat it up, both reactions will speed up, but the endothermic one will speed up more. This means the equilibrium will shift to produce more nitrogen and hydrogen. If it's cooler, though, the endothermic one will slow down more, so the equilibrium changes to produce more ammonia.
So in other words, we want to run the process as cold as possible, then?
We do, but it's a trade-off. Low temperatures encourage a good yield of ammonia, but higher temperatures make both reactions run faster. If it's too cold, you'll be waiting around forever to get your ammonia, which is not worth the cost. Too hot, you'll very quickly get your ammonia, but there won't be much of it. And the result is a compromise, 450 degrees C, which is low enough to get a good yield of ammonia, but high enough to get a reasonable rate of reaction. The cheap iron catalyst does help speed up the rate of reaction, but it doesn't change how much ammonia you get.
And what about pressure? Because it's done under pressure, isn't it?
Yeah. If you increase the pressure, you squeeze gases together, and this favours the reaction that produces the smallest number of molecules. Now, in the Haber process, you have one nitrogen molecule plus three hydrogen molecules, a total of four, going to two ammonia molecules, and they're all gases. So if you increase the pressure, you'll get more ammonia.
And so, presumably, we need the highest pressure we can get here.
Yeah, but it's very expensive to get very high pressures. The higher the pressure you use, the more energy you have to use to pump the gases in there. You'll need a stronger reaction vessel, and of course it will be far more explosive if something goes wrong. So the compromise we reach for the Haber process is 200 atmospheres, which is about half of the pressure of water on the wreck of the Titanic.